Hello, hello. The Pro Football Weekly Podcast is back. Thank you for being with us. He is Eric Edholm. I am Arthur Arkish, and we have just a couple things to discuss. We're taping here, about 2 hours before free agency officially begins, but Eric, it kind of feels like free agency is unofficially over.
Yeah, no, I'm ready to pack it in. we already know most of the moves, it seems like, but yeah, there's still obviously some free agents to note who have yet to decide what they're doing, and so there's still that second wave and a smaller third wave. But yeah, we've reached the point where we know a good amount of what's going to happen here. So pretty interesting.
This is the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. He's Eric. I am Arthur. Check us out on iTunes and subscribe to the PFW Podcast, the Pro Football Weekly Bears Podcast, everything while you're over there. If you're following along at the website, you're apprised on basically everything that's been going on, but we're going to go through some of the bigger moves and give you our thoughts on it. And Eric, as things always seem to start with, the quarterbacks and Kirk Cousins and his fully guaranteed contract. A, what does it mean for the Vikings? And B, what does it mean for guys like Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan and agents who are getting ready to negotiate quarterback contracts down the road?
Yeah, no, it's obviously a fascinating deal on a lot of levels. And, you know, and I guess, you know, you could hear at the combine kind of the, I don't know, I mean, Mike Zimmer was sort of talking about, hey, on the one hand, we know we have to get better, but you know, paying that much money to a quarterback and maybe not getting a huge increase over what Case Keenum gave them last year, it's going to hurt them in some other way. There'll be collateral damage. They probably won't be able to re-sign one of these key defenders after this year. So you know that there's a sense they've got to win and win big this year. So I'll be curious to see how it all works out. And then, as you pointed out, I think this is going to have a lasting effect. Will quarterbacks go for these shorter term, you know, guaranteed deals? Will it leak into other positions? Is there going to be a change before the new CBA in the next few years? And that's right when Cousins' deal ends up. So a lot of layers to this thing, and I can't wait to see how it all works out.
Eric, do you think the Vikings are betting more that Kirk Cousins is a marked upgrade over Case Keenum last year, or more so that Case Keenum can't replicate what he did last year over the next three?
Yeah, I think they feel like, and I don't know, I'd be curious to hear your take. I just think they feel like, yes, they got some really good stuff out of him last year, and it tapered off, obviously, the last sort of six quarters of the playoffs there.
Right.
But, yeah, I just feel like they're kind of thinking they weren't going to be able to get lightning in a bottle twice. You know, that whatever he did last year was probably the best of what he was ever going to offer. Now, clearly, the Broncos think differently. They gave him a two-year deal and hope it's going to be good, obviously. But,
yeah,
I just sort of feel like They weren't expecting that same level of play through the 13 regular season games.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It seemed like kind of a perfect storm for Keenum, and we'll get to the Broncos in a minute. I don't really think they can recreate that perfect storm, but at least they seem to get kind of a decent deal. It looks like it's going to be about 2 years and $36 million. So basically the couple extra million that John Elway wasn't willing to give Brock Osweiler, he was willing to give Case Keenum, it sounds like. But before we go there, just my thoughts quickly on the quarterback landscape moving forward. I'm really not sure. I think it's kind of a to-be-determined, Eric. I wonder if it was also the perfect storm for Kirk Cousins at age 29 in his prime and with no injuries or other background concerns and being available to all 32 clubs. I wonder, you know, for the teams like the Packers and the Falcons,
who still have a little bit of leverage,
I have to kind of imagine that it may not go exactly the same way. It's not like Aaron Rodgers is getting a fully guaranteed contract of upwards of over $100 million, is it?
I don't know. That's the big question. I mean, right. 3 for 100. Is it possible? I don't know. I mean, it obviously, you know, you see the Packers and making some moves, and the Falcons may be active as well. And so it's going to affect the rest of the salary cap, but
right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to know exactly what it's going to be, but just talking to a few agents yesterday, a lot of them feel like there could be a dramatic effect.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's something we'll keep an eye on, and there obviously are going to be some headliner deals moving forward. Eric, a lot of other quarterback movement, obviously. We knew it was going to be a very impactful free agent period in that regard. What do you like, whether it was the Broncos signing Keenum, whether it was the Jets doubling down for McCown and Bridgewater, the Cardinals rolling the dice on Sam Bradford? I'm leaving one or two out, but what do you like about the veteran quarterback movement thus far, and what don't you like?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the interesting one are the Jets, because they miss out on the top guys. They bring back Josh McCown. They appear to be locked in on Teddy Bridgewater. Forgive me if they've actually made that move yet. As we tape this, I hadn't seen official word, but all signs point to that happening. So, you know, and then there'll be another quarterback in the equation, but it at least removes the immediate dire need. Draft one at number six if they're not in love with somebody. That said, I don't think they should pass on somebody. But I'm not saying that move that infatuated me the most. But you know that everyone thought, oh gosh, you know that who are they going to get? Well, maybe they end up finding a pretty decent 1 year solution there. We'll see. So you know the Broncos, I think, still have to be in that same boat where they consider options at five. Do they take a quarterback there? Do they look down the line for somebody else? We know Elway's record there. I don't know. What did you like? I don't love the Cardinals' answers with Bradford and Glennon. I'm not feeling that one too much. I don't know. I guess there's not too much to get too excited about.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Eric, because I'm with you. I mean, Sam Bradford essentially got a raise after playing two games last season. He played with a game of his life versus the Saints and then only reappeared for one half the rest of the season with that degenerative knee issue, and apparently gets a $2 million raise. So that is more than a little bit of a head scratcher. I like that Elway showed some restraint and didn't feel like he had to hit the home run sense that maybe the Vikings and Cousins was, you know, basically a fait accompli, and then went to plan B, which was Case Keenum. Didn't have to get out over his skis to do it. I just have my doubts about the Broncos' ability to sort of replicate what allowed Keenum to be so successful last year. You know, it's funny, Eric, and we kind of have to, you know, it seems like an eternity ago, but of course we have to merge kind of the trades and the free agent signing periods
together.
And I didn't like the price to John Dorsey to acquire Tyrod Taylor in terms of being the 65th overall pick in that trade. But when I look at all the contracts and everything, and I look at Tyrod's reasonable 2018 salary, I'm not sure the Browns didn't make out the best in this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and a lot of Browns fans were getting really angry with me on Twitter. I said basically what you did, which is, maybe it works out really well, but they're paying him $16 million and they're giving up essentially what you view as the last pick of the second round, first pick of the third round. And boy, look at some of the guys who went in that range last year. You see some really good talents there. So, you know, they're giving up a high price. But if you take a step back and look big picture, that move, I think, resonates because, number one, the Browns had to send a signal. They had to indicate that they were serious, that they were an attractive place for free agents to go, that they have a veteran quarterback option. So do they have to overpay to get to that level? Yes. But you do that, you make the move for Demarius Randle, you make the move for Jarvis Landry, you start seeing the big picture, it makes a little bit more sense. But more than that, it also kind of indicates to me that they weren't going to give Hugh Jackson his preference, which is A.J. McCarron, right? I mean, that was the guy, the apple of his eye and everything. They went a different direction. So to me, the pressure is even more on Hugh. Well, not that it shouldn't be at 1-31, but this is an indication. Boy, if Hugh Jackson doesn't make a dramatic improvement with this team on the field, in the record, on the standings, you know, they're going to have to go in a different direction. So this is a front office move, not a move to appease the coaches, in my opinion.
Yeah, no doubt. We're on the same page on that one. I think I called it on Twitter at the time of the deal as a bit of a hip check that Dorsey was putting on Hugh Jackson, who thought he had his guy for the second time.
And they end up going in a different direction.
So a lot of other big stories breaking, obviously, around the league, Eric. I've got a handful I have written down here. I think it's not unusual to see a lot of big-name veterans get released, cap casualties, or maybe just a matter of declining players who aren't, you know, the deals aren't commensurate with their performance on the field. But I can't help but think that there's a couple guys this time around. I'm thinking about Ndamukong Suh specifically and Tyrann Mathieu, Jordy Nelson to a lesser extent. Some guys who still are going to have a chance to carve out some pretty impressive second, third career acts now that they're hitting the open market this week.
Yeah, I mean, Sue's a fascinating one. You know, can Tyrann Mathieu revive his career after, you know, two ACL tears and, you know, before the age of 25, he didn't look like the same player last year, but I think a lot of people realize boy, if you get him another year removed from that, he could be special again. So, you know, what's going on with Sheldon Richardson too? You know, that's another player that, you know, if you could tap into his potential, can be really, really good. But it's not exactly clear how, you know, how and where he fits and for what money. So, yeah, there's definitely some good players who, you know, have – the market has changed based on veterans who've been released, you know, either flooding the market or appearing in a position where there just isn't that much talent. So, yeah, I mean, we've seen the way that – teams overpaid for, you know, Andrew Norwell and more to that point. Nate Solder, $15.5 million per year for a good but not a great left tackle. I don't know. It's so fascinating when you see these players come onto the market who aren't true unrestricted free agents, then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, well, okay, what is this guy gonna get? So a lot going on here, and you're right, Sue is a fascinating one. Honey Badger is a big one. There's some names out there that really open your eyes a little bit.
Yeah, that's a lot of hog molly that Dave Gettleman is signing up for there at the Giants. You wonder if he kind of felt like he had to, and you wrote it well this morning, he had to pivot after missing out on Norwell, and then maybe had to pay an extra tax to ensure that he got one guy to kind of anchor that offensive line that they plan on rebuilding there. So interesting stuff. Eric, I can't think it's a coincidence. And Ndamukong Suh, as you mentioned, of course, got a late start, just officially released this week, unlike Sheldon Richardson, who we knew was, you know, going to be an unrestricted free agent if the Seahawks didn't tag him. Yet it still doesn't feel like it's a coincidence that maybe the two most talented defensive linemen in free agency this year, who have some considerable questions that teams will have to sort through off the field, have lasted. I know we're not free agency hasn't even started yet. We can't talk about first and second tiers, but the way that all the names flew off the board yesterday, I feel like it's not a coincidence that Richardson and Sue are still out there.
Yeah, and what was your point on that again? I'm sorry, I missed the. Why were you saying you think they're still out there?
I don't think it'll be a football decision as much as having to figure out the personalities, having to figure out the locker room fits. There's more to wade through with those two players, I think.
100%. Yeah, I mean, you got to decide. I mean, look. I don't think Ndamukong Suh is a bad human being. I think Sheldon Richardson has made some dumb mistakes early in his career, and I don't necessarily think he's a horrible dude either. But if you're trying to carefully craft a locker room and you've had issues before with, you know, caustic personalities and stuff like that, yeah, I could see some hesitation there. But then again, you think, wow, what's one of the hardest things to find? Yeah, edge rushers are. But also those interior rushers, too, those guys who can just knife through the middle of the line, demand double teams, things like that, change the way people block you. They're hard to fight. So there is that. It goes both ways. There's a pull and a push. So I don't know. I don't know what the value is for Sue at this. I know he's going to want to get paid because he expected to be, you know, paid from the Dolphins a significant amount. So that could also limit his market, too.
What do you think about Deion Lewis cashing in with the Titans? An awesome story he is, obviously. Went from journeyman to, you know, carving out a great niche with the Patriots to tearing his ACL to leading them in rushing last year. And now he cashes in, I believe, on almost $12 million guaranteed. That's like top five guaranteed amount for non-first-round running backs. That's quite the payday for him to join the Titans.
Yeah, and I mean, seems surprised, like, oh, okay, you know, Derrick Henry's going to get handed this job on a silver platter. You know, John Robinson, the GM, talked up Henry's improved receiving ability, but I guess it's not surprising they added a player who could be a great changeup, be more of a factor in the pass game, that sort of thing. And you start thinking about Matt LaFleur, the OC, what he saw, you know, last year with the Rams. He was on the Falcons staff the year before that, the way they use their running backs creatively, just space players, guys who can make people miss. And all of a sudden, I don't know, I'm intrigued. Do you think this Titans offense now has enough juice in enough places to kind of be one of those 2016 Falcons, 2017 Rams teams? I'm not quite there, but I think there's some creativity possibilities if you sort of project some of these guys forward, and Corey Davis and whoever else, and then figure Lewis is going to have a big role too.
Yeah, I think it has the opportunity to be exotic, as Mike Mularkey promised and repeatedly failed to deliver. But no, I don't think we should yet go to 2016 Falcons, 2017 Rams, because I just I don't know about the receiver talent. If Corey Davis pans out, maybe, but I still think there's a lot of questions there.
It's there.
But I do really like the fit of Deion Lewis and Derrick Henry, as long as you weren't planning on drafting Derrick Henry in round one of your fantasy football leagues later on this summer. Should be a good move. Eric, what about the 49ers? If we're talking about space type change up running backs, I like what the 49ers are doing. I thought Richard Sherman made a ton of sense. Obviously they hit the jackpot with Jimmy Garoppolo, but is this regime just going to have one of those contracts annually where you scratch your head? And is it Jerick McKinnon this year getting a huge amount of guaranteed money? He's kind of the Kyle Juszczyk, who also of course went to the 49ers along with Malcolm Smith in a couple curious moves in their first free agents period together. Your thoughts on Jerick McKinnon going to Kyle Shanahan in a big contract?
I'll be honest, I only saw the total money. What was the guaranteed number? I saw, I think it was 4 years for 30 something or over.
I'm pulling it up right now. Give me just 1 second.
Yeah, because my initial reaction was, hey, if it's like the Sherman deal where the total looks high but the guaranteed money is actually really low, I'll like it. I think it's fine. I've always liked Jerick McKinnon. He plays with some power for a smaller guy. He's got that shiftiness. He expanded his role as a receiver. But, you know, again, it's the whole running back value thing. And it seems like they just targeted him. They said, this is the guy we want. We'll let Carlos Hyde walk for pennies, and we'll bring in McKinnon, who's a different type of guy.
Right. And, you know, actually, I should know by now, there isn't any reports on the guaranteed money. So all we know is 4 years, $30 million at $7.5 million average. Still very high for the running back, but obviously the devil's in the details, if you will. So we'll just have to wait and see on that. And then I guess the third part of the running back equation, the veteran running back movement, it's almost kind of oxymoronic. But, Eric, what about Carlos Hyde going to the Browns? Do you think that potentially takes them off the list of candidates for a Saquon Barkley or a running back high in the draft?
No, I think it just gives them an option for, you know, I mean, like if they still feel like he's the top player on their board, they'll take him. I don't think they'll take him at one. I mean, the more I've thought about this, the more I feel like they have to go quarterback one. I think it's Sam Darnold until I get other information on that. And so I think they'll go Darnold at one and then just kind of see how the next two picks play out. So, you know, do the Giants go Barkley? Do they go offensive line with Quentin Nelson? Do they trade down? Are they looking for a quarterback? And then, you know, Colts at three, maybe they're in the Chubb market, et cetera. And then you can decide what to do at four. I don't think they're going to feel like, okay, we've got Carlos Hyde. We don't have to take, you know, we're not going to take Barkley at the top of the draft. I still think that if that lines up, they'd be crazy to pass on him because every team seems like they've got two backs now. And, you know, again, they're different runners as well, too, I think.
Well, Eric, the Giants have Jonathan Stewart now, so obviously they don't need Saquon Barkley. They're all set. Everything is fixed in New York. So what else did I want to get to here? What do you think about the WR2s getting paid, Eric? What about the Albert Wilsons and the Corey Grants of the world? That might have been the most out of whack positional market that we saw Tuesday, from my estimation.
Yeah, you're calling them W-2s. I'm wondering whether they're threes or fours,
yeah,
too.
You're right.
I don't know. I mean, just like Albert Wilson to me is a good player. If you have him on your team, you're happy to get him. He's a good little blocker. You know, he's kind of a stocky little 5'9", 204-pound guy. And he can play the slot. He can pitch in outside if you need him to and all that stuff. But $8 million a year? I don't know. That seems wild. And so the money they spent on the Dolphins, that is, the money they spent on Albert Wilson and Danny Amendola comes out to $14 million a year. Could they not have put that into one player with Jarvis Landry and I think a better return? I just don't see the point. This just has a Mike Tannenbaum feel to it, and I don't know. I don't know. I don't love it. And yeah, you're right. I mean, Ryan Grant, you know, and some of these other guys, I mean, even John Brown, he might be closer to a WR2. Just, I feel like some of this money has gotten a little silly. Did you like any of the receiver moves? Did you feel like any of them were worth the dollars they paid?
Yeah, I like... I like the top guys that could potentially both be bargains, you know. I think the Bears and Allen Robinson may have hit a home run if he's the guy from 2 years ago. Sammy Watkins, maybe a little bit bigger risk, a little bit more guaranteed money, but at least you know what the pedigree is and there's a chance there. But no, some of these other deals I didn't really understand a lot. John Brown I kind of get, I guess, only because it's a 1 year, at least it's a short-term deal, and he's got a chance to bet on himself. We're not going to talk about the Bears a ton, Eric, because we have a separate podcast for it, but they have been a huge story, and Taylor Gabriel does kind of fall under that category too. I think he ended up getting somewhere between 12 and 15 million guaranteed. If not more, I think Trey Burton got like 22 million guaranteed. So I don't know. It's probably just a case of there is a rising cap and a kind of just a lukewarm free agent pool, and teams that don't have a lot of their own players to re-sign, they know they have to spend the money somewhere, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, again, like you said, we'll, for people who are into the Bears, can check out the Bears podcast. But, you know, the Trey Burton thing is a projection, right? You're not paying him for what he's done to this point. You're paying him for what he could be.
Absolutely.
And you think about Delanie Walker or somebody like that who was kind of buried in San Francisco and then finally got his chance. Or, you know, these players come – they take a while to develop. He was a quarterback in college, shifted to a tight end, only played there a couple years. He was third on the depth chart for – had to, you know, break in under Chick Kelly and then switch systems in Philly, and he finally got a chance last year. You look at the game he started towards the end of the season, he played well, obviously had the big throw in the Super Bowl. So there was a market for Trey Burton. I can tell you that other teams certainly called on him and were expected to, you know, get in on him. So there were a lot of teams vying for his services. Like you said, it's just sort of the dearth of the position and the need is really high.
It's Eric Edholm and Arthur Extra on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes left here on the show. And Eric, as we are recording, it has become official. Joe Thomas is hanging them up. The future Hall of Fame left tackle of the Cleveland Browns is done. Kind of just your thoughts on Joe Thomas and if the Browns have positioned themselves to weather this departure, or at least started to maybe with one of the moves they made yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, they bring in Hubbard and from Pittsburgh, and obviously Todd Haley knows him well, and I guess they could start him at left tackle. He's played right tackle as well, but you just can't replace Joe Thomas, as you know. I mean, the guy never missed a snap until he got hurt. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's going to be one of the best blockers in our lifetime, right up there with the Jonathan Ogdens and Orlando Paces and Walter Joneses. We just don't see those guys anymore. I mean, it seemed like a generation ago there were a lot of elite left tackles. There really aren't anymore. So this is the end of an era. And, you know, the Browns wasted a brilliant career, unfortunately. And it's sad because he's a good dude. He's been an ambassador. He's a funny guy. An Iron Man, you know, he went fishing on draft day. I still love that. He's a different kind of dude. And I'll always respect what he did for a team that barely won games. You know, that was just so non-competitive for such a long time.
Yeah, I think you absolutely nailed it. The key with him is the consistency, the kind of unwavering, despite just an absolute, you know, disaster annually around him, never seemed to affect his play, and he never seemed to really spout off about it either. He was always a good sport and just a legendary player. So the best of luck to Joe Thomas,
in his retirement.
Those guys don't come around very often. The good news for the Browns, obviously, is they have just a little bit of draft capital to try and line up a few possible replacements for Joe Thomas. So interesting stuff there. Eric, I got one more note written down here. A couple minutes left on the PFW podcast. Your thoughts on how the cornerback market unfolded. We saw rapid fire. I know I had you writing them yesterday. Malcolm Butler and Trumaine Johnson. I think there was a third big name that went off the board in seemingly like a 45-minute stretch. And they kind of were like slightly different tiers, too, in the way those contracts were drawn up.
Yeah, no, obviously, I think the Jets had to get I think Trumaine Johnson was really big for them. Now, I don't know if he's a special player, but I think they kind of felt obligated to get him after missing on some other players, after feeling like, you know, boy, their best guy is Buster Screen. You know, they just don't have a big press corner outside, and they really needed that. Yeah, so I think those are the big ones right there. You know, we'll see what happens with Patrick Robinson. We saw Prince Amukamara come back. You know, there's a few more out there. Who am I forgetting? I know there was
Malcolm Butler. Butler, the big deal. Yep.
Right. He obviously was involved with Detroit Lions and a couple other teams. Houston Texans were in on him as well. And I guess you know, there was just not that much worry about the Super Bowl. You know, that what happened with his benching, that it wasn't that big a deal. Not that I thought it would crush his market, but I thought there might be some wonder. So you have to sort of figure that the familiarity of, you know, Logan Ryan played there. I don't think that John Robinson was with the team. I may have written that last night, but I'm not sure if he was with the team when they signed him as an undrafted free agent, but he may have been. And so there's obviously some real familiarity, and I'm sure Mike Vrabel knows plenty about what the Patriots do, and so that played into it. But yeah, that's a lot of money for a guy who wasn't great last year before he was benched in the Super Bowl.
Right, and frankly, Trumaine Johnson a little inconsistent on the second year of the franchise tag as well with the Rams. We've spent so much time this week, Eric, talking about kind of the way that guys like Kirk Cousins and Sam Bradford have maximized their earning power. But what about Trumaine Johnson over a three-year period? Well, I guess if you count this now new deal and the guarantees that come with it, he's going to put about $75 million in the bank. That's not a bad gig if you can get it for Trumaine Johnson.
Like the Kirk Cousins of cornerbacks, right?
Exactly. I mean,
he played it well. He's been good but not elite. I don't know that you'd call him one of the top 10 corners in the league, just like you may not be able to call Cousins a top 10 quarterback. I know it's apples to oranges, but – you know, there's a need at both positions. People can't find enough of these guys. And, you know, he's got the length that everybody's looking for. And, you know, he fits what Todd Bowles wants to be there, Casey Rogers, the defensive coordinator. And so, yeah, he played it well, and he was smart. And the Rams, on some level, I'm sure, wanted him back, but realized it was just impossible at this point. They weren't going to keep him and Joyner. And so, yeah, I remember watching that Cowboys game last year and thinking, this guy's a number one corner. Am I missing something? You know, but he's played well through stretches. He's just not that superb player who, you know, he's not Richard Sherman 3 years ago. He's not the Darrelle Revis to me.
Yeah, we're in agreement there, but it's a premium position. And again, as these teams got to find a way to spend the money, and I guess the Jets probably felt a little bit of extra pressure after not getting Kirk Cousins. So last one on my list here, Eric, let's get to the Packers for just a brief minute and their rookie general manager, Brian Gutekunst, whose first big move as the general manager of the Packers is releasing a legend in Jordy Nelson and replacing him with Jimmy Graham. Just your thoughts on betting, the way I view it essentially here is you're betting on Jimmy Graham over Jordy Nelson.
Yeah, and it sounds like Aaron Rodgers had a lot to do with this, which is fascinating. Because, I mean, everybody's first reaction was, oh, what's Rodgers going to think? But it sounds like Rodgers was helping sort of recruit Jimmy Graham there, and that he felt like this is what he needed. Now, obviously, I don't think, you know, I think Aaron would have loved to have an opportunity to play longer with Jordy. They're, you know, they're BFFs and all that, but there's also a realization that he wasn't going to be that $12 million receiver this year. So, yeah, I mean, Graham, to me, it's funny. The Packers, the one thing they were really good at offensively was in the red zone. It's what Graham does. He's like a red zone guy. He was 9 yards a catch last year. So, I don't know. Do you love it? I guess I'm just really kind of ambivalent about the deal in general. I just didn't think it was all that fantastic.
Yeah, I didn't love it because I think Jimmy Graham is, you know, he's a good player. And like you said, he's really good in the red zone. But I feel like he's somewhat of a one-trick pony. And even if Jordy Nelson is going to be that now, too, I just feel like the next team that signs Jordy Nelson is going to be thrilled with their decision. And I wonder if the Packers, who've went down the tight end road 2 years in a row now with obviously Martellus Bennett and Jared Cook, I'm not fully convinced that it's going to be any different this time around. But there's no question that Brian Gutekunst, this one's going to be kind of attached to him and just in the timing of the move as he takes over there.
Yeah, and they signed Mo Wilkerson. I know not for big money, but that's a risk yeah. too. I mean, those are two bold moves, well, three bold moves if you count Nelson, really the likes of which we haven't seen. I mean, I know that you mentioned the Bennett deal and they signed Lance Kendricks and they had Cookie before that. Right. So I know they signed some tight ends, but this is pretty bold.
Yeah, no doubt, and I love the Mo Wilkerson move just because I think it's more of a calculated gamble in my estimation, and you're pairing him with Mike Patton, and you're pairing him with Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels, and I really think there's a good chance that they will capture lightning in a bottle there, but we'll have to wait and see. An interesting start to free agency for the Green Bay Packers and across the league, so we're going to be continuing to break it down at ProFootballWeekly.com. We're going to let Eric Edholm go. We got a lot more stuff to get to at the website, but we appreciate you being with us. One more reminder, check out out the Pro Football Weekly the Pro Football Weekly podcast, at iTunes. Leave us a rating and review while you're there after you've subscribed. And thank you very much to Eric Edholm, to our producer Dan Mott, most of us, most of all to the listeners. Enjoy free agency as it gets underway, and we will be back to talk with you very soon.